Howdy, it's your friend Dan again. And I suppose I'm here to talk to you a bit more on this Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve, 2018. And yeah, it's December the 24th, 2018. And another instance or installment of the Little Saigon Report. I started reading the Book of Enoch. Technically, the Book of Enoch belongs to a set of texts in Judaic and Christian literature that is referred to as Apocrypha. Apocrypha are those texts that are considered relevant to Christian or Judaic doctrine, but are not core. So, in the 4th century AD, when the Christians met at the Council of Nicaea and decided to figure out what goes in and what gets left out of the Bible, one of the books that got left out was the Book of Enoch. And so I'm looking at that right now and kind of looking over the other Apocrypha. Full disclosure, based upon other things you probably heard from me in the last couple days, I'm in a pretty shitty mood. Though, for a lonely, middle-aged, divorced male, I'm not, on Christmas Eve, I'm not entirely sure that's uncalled for or out of character. One of the thoughts that I had this afternoon that led to me wanting to do another podcast was this question of demons. I don't know if you know who Steve Quayle is. He's often on the Hageman and Hageman Report, which is kind of a current event slash religious show. I don't know Steve Quayle, you know, at all in any real sense. I've listened to him online on YouTube for many years now. I have never read any of his books. He seems like a good man, and he seems extraordinarily well-read when it comes to the history of Christianity, Judaism, and those subjects related there too. So yeah, I have been listening to Steve Quayle, and he talks a lot about fallen angels, and he talks a lot about the fact that there may be, even in our time, Nephilim, which are basically the children of fallen angels and mortal women, Nephilim still alive out there somewhere, frozen, hiding in caves, who knows. And I'm not saying this to mock it. Frankly, I find it mysterious on one level, and not mysterious in a bad way, the way that religion is often mysterious, the reason why the word mystery is often applied. There are things about one's beliefs that don't have easy answers, and Christianity, like many other religions, is no exception. The main subject is a little bit off-putting to a Christian, though if you've read the Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis, it shouldn't bother you too much. The main subject is basically demons. Now, so you know, prior to my own personal revelation and my own beginning of the journey upon this walk I'm on towards God with Jesus as a Christian, not necessarily a really good one, but I suppose all things that end up someplace can often start out small, and that's how I would categorize my Christianity. I have an open heart to God. I pray. I don't pray as often as I should. I believe that's a sign of my pride. But prior to this, I would have classified demons in psychological terms, you know, sort of like the incubi and the succubi with respect to sleep paralysis and nightmares. I would have ascribed to the concept of the demon features of the unconscious. And, you know, whether you approach the subject from the Freudian or the Jungian perspective, Sigmund Freud being the famous psychoanalyst, Jung being the famous analytic psychologist, both of whom actually worked together up until the point that Freud believed that Jung wanted to kill him. which I think is kind of funny and ridiculous. So there was a time, and it's not entirely gone. I mean, I still kind of think of things this way a little bit, but there was a time when I would have thought of demons purely in psychological terms. You know, it's not to say that I would have said poo-poo on religious actions. You know, often with respect to treating mental illness, it can be helpful, maybe even critical in an anthropological sense, to incorporate people's beliefs, people's religions, people's culture into the treatment of mental illness. I was at a lecture once at the University of Washington when a professor was talking about this. And essentially what the professor said was, is that, well, they had a case of a woman who was mentally ill. She was also Roma, you know, and or gypsy. And one of the things that she mentioned is that modern medicine is really good at treating people like subjects, like things, like objects, but not so good at dealing with the intricacies, the subtleties of a person's cultural context. And so this professor described the situation. She was actually a nurse, and so she wasn't the most senior person in the context, in the treatment context. But, you know, she learned a lot. She learned that you cannot dismiss people's beliefs, that, for example, in dealing with the gypsies and medical treatment, you had to deal with the family in a certain kind of way that might be radically different, very different from dealing with other folks, especially those who are secular. So yeah, prior to my awakening in 2012, I would have said that the demon is really just a metaphor, and that as a metaphor, yeah, it sometimes manifests itself as mental illness, but that's what it is, right? Mental illness. I have in recent years come to the realization, especially around the questions of spiritual warfare, and it's one of the reasons why I mentioned Steve Quayle, it's because he has written a lot. I haven't read anything he's written, but he's written a lot and spoken a lot on the topic of spiritual warfare. And yeah, I've thought a lot about this. And so the demon as a thing has morphed over the last few years from a kind of psychological or mental illness issue to something else. To the point that when I find myself depressed or angry, and yeah, I find myself depressed and angry a lot these days. In fact, a lot over the last 10 years. I pray to the Lord in heaven to give me peace. I pray to him to soften my heart. But I have a wrathful heart. I mean, I have seen things in my personal life that I consider to be inconsistent with any kind of decent human behavior. And I know everybody sees it. Like, everybody sees the shit going on around them. So what's wrong with me? Why does it make me so angry? It's kind of like corporate America. When you're in corporate America, you're expected to do your job, not ask too many questions, and frankly, go along and get along. Whatever the current, you know, zeitgeist is, whatever the flavor of the week is, whether you're in software engineering or not, you know, corporate America has a certain kind of cult feature to it, and you either obey the cult or you leave. In my case, it's gotten so toxic that it's hard for me to deal with it. It's hard for me to process and accept it. It's one of the reasons why I've had difficulties in recent years with different types of corporate environments. And, you know, to tell you the truth, I'm not really sure it's much of an issue at this point. Whatever work I do in the future, and I hope to find some kind of work, it has to be closer to my soul. But yeah, you know, prior to 2012, I would have said my anger and my depression are simply issues of the mind. And I wouldn't have called them disease necessarily. I don't think that depression or sadness is a disease. Actually, if you have a conscience, you have a soul, and you look around the world today, and you never get sad, and you never get upset, then either A, you're lucky enough to live in some fantasy land reality where you have no connection to the reality I see, or B, you just don't, you know, really care, like you're oblivious, like you're essentially kind of a spiritual zombie. And that's the thing I would say about a lot of people these days. I sometimes call them pod people, but maybe spiritual zombie is a better description. These are people who wander through this wilderness of contemporary existence, staring at their phones and not really concerned about their fellow man or anything else. In many ways, easy pickings for, you know, evil, for darkness, in many ways, you know, already probably sold that way. I mean, when you think of what worship is, worship takes many forms, and the word worship means different things to different people. But one feature of worship is the ritual. It is the practice. It is the thing you do every day. Like, for example, I haven't started doing it yet, but I'm going to start waking up every morning and saying a prayer. I will push my pride aside. I will accept the fact that I have to be humble enough to do this. So I'm going to do this every day. That is a kind of worshipful practice. It is a ritual. It is something I'm going to start doing. When people constantly look at their phones, and I got to tell you, if you're on the metro bus ride or on the train, or just walking down the sidewalk, most of the people you see will be plugged into that little glowing rectangle. Almost like the, you know, the, not the obelisk, but the monolith from 2001 A Space Odyssey. You know, Arthur C. Clarke's story, but the movie. You know, those big monoliths, they're not giant. They're, you can hold them in the palm of your hand, but in many ways, the modern human stares at this little frickin' monolith the same way the crazy apes did in the movie. So yeah, I guess the concept of demon is different. It takes on a different form, whether or not you look at it as someone who might be secular or not. And so when it comes to things like, well, Dan, you're angry or you're sad. Well, anger and sadness come in different levels, right? And there's a certain point at which it goes too far. Like if you're so angry that you can't step back from your anger and actually find a moment of peace, then it's almost as if something else has taken over. And this is the basic segue. If demons are real, and I believe that they are, then they probably operate very much the way that C.S. Lewis describes them in the Screwtape Letters. They are probably fairly subtle. They are probably like a whisper in the air. And this is where it's as difficult because, you know, I'm going to talk about some stuff that frankly is hard, not because I'm ashamed, but because people don't always respond correctly when you talk about certain subjects, one of which is when your sadness reaches a point and your hopelessness reaches a point where you consider taking your own life. And I don't want to say that's where I'm at. I'm not really there right now. Yeah, my life's a little broken. Truly, I have no one to blame but myself. Yes, I will wake up tomorrow morning on Christmas Day and keep believing, keep having faith that somehow, some way, by using the gifts that God has given me and by seeking the Lord's help, I will make it through this wilderness. But yeah, I got to tell you, the wilderness right now looks dark and deep. And I find myself, like when I was reading, I was reading something from Numbers. It could have been Deuteronomy, but it was basically one of the first two books after Exodus. And I was reading something. And again, I had brought this up in another podcast, but it seems important enough to me. I was reading a situation where, you know, and this happened a lot once the Israelites left Egypt. If you've read the books following Exodus, you'll know this with absolute certainty. But I was reading this section where they were talking about how the Israelites were upset. They were in the wilderness. They were cold. They were hungry. They had been wandering for so long, and they started getting grumbly, as happens a lot with the Israelites in the Old Testament. And they decide, well, you know, maybe we can elect a leader and go back to Egypt. And that's one of those whisperings. That's one of those things where, you know, if demons function in the world in any kind of way that is sophisticated. I'm not talking about cartoons where some little devil shows up on your shoulder. I'm not talking about TV shows where you meet some demon at the crossroads. I mean, that's great for fiction. And it helps people who can't process concepts to actually watch a story. But the demons that actually exist, if they exist, and I think they do, they probably don't show up on your shoulder. They probably are not that obvious. I'm not saying that every once in a while things can't get spooky. I have a family member who has relayed spooky events to me. But for the most part, I think they're fairly subtle. They're a lot like the voice in my head. The voice in my head that will say, Dan, 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 you are worthless. You are a failure. You're almost 50 years old. You're fat. You're ugly. And you know what? You're probably not that smart. No one's going to hire you for a job. You're not going to get another job. There's really no point. You don't have a lot of food left. You have about, you know, I don't know, a month's worth of rent left. Maybe you should just go away. And when you add to this mixture the general feeling that people of my demographic, white, straight, male, middle-aged, might as well go away. I mean, that's the general impression I get, especially when I work on software teams in the Seattle area, that I am not wanted, I am not needed. I sometimes think that the only reason why they hire somebody like me is because I don't know why. It may be the opposite going on. Like, literally, in a sense, it's kind of like, I don't know. What am I thinking of here? Affirmative action in reverse. The voice in my head could be thought of as out of control mental illness. Although, I would be careful to characterize feelings of sadness that have concrete aims. For example, if you love someone and that person dies, or that person dumps you, you will feel loss. You will feel sadness. The sadness can last a while. When I separated from my ex-wife in 2013, I lived in a fantasy world for a few weeks where I assumed, well, I'll just be fine. It'll be fine. Of course, I washed it all down with a lot of beer and weed, but, you know, it'll be fine. And then a few months later, especially after I left Seattle, I'm back again, right? But I had left Seattle in 2014, it hit me. And so it was every day, you know, every day it was something. And I was very sad. So sadness is not necessarily random or a disease. Sometimes sadness or depression or ennui or whatever word you want to use, melancholy, hopelessness, these things are features and aspects of reality. And on the first level, they have nothing to do with demons. You know, love, hate, sadness, these are feelings. These are emotional states. The fact that you can look at something that is terrible and it makes you feel sad is a good indication that you have a proper functioning brain and soul. That's my general feeling. But if you're in a land, like, for example, you know, Abraham and Lot being in Sodom, you know, if you're in Sodom and you're in a land of nothing that is familiar, nothing that is friendly, everything that is coarse and violent and destructive, if you're in a land that rebukes you and renounces you and frankly worships entities that have nothing to do with what is right or good, and in the case of Seattle, what we're talking about is worship of technology, worship of the state, you know, really worship of technocracy. If you wanted to know the religion of secular Seattle, it is technocracy. People have total faith that technology will save them. They have total faith to the point that they are focused, they are connected, they are worshipful towards their phones, worshipful towards their technology. And listen, I'm here right now recording my voice into a digital recorder. I have a computer in my room. I won't be a hypocrite. Do I currently have a smartphone? Listen, I currently can't afford a phone, but what I do have is a flip phone. So eventually when I get the money together, I'll recharge it on that $50 a month plan And there you go. But I'll never own a smartphone again. I mean, for all sorts of reasons. I don't really want to go into right now, but I will never own a smartphone again. Ever. I'll never own a smart device. I have the flip phone because on some basic level, you more or less get disconnected. Like, you know, when they talk about the mark of the beast, you know, you won't be able to eat, you won't be able to do anything. Let me tell you something. If you don't have a mobile phone these days, it is almost like the mark of the beast. If you rebuke a smartphone, okay, if you don't have a device that will take apps, you might as well just disconnect yourself from the great human machine that exudes all the resources you need to survive as some human being in the modern setting. So the religion of Seattle, for the most part, is technocracy. And so if you're in that situation and you see what you see and you notice all of the relatively mundane acts of evil that happen on a daily basis, but then the ones that are not so mundane and not so subtle, and you happen to get sad and you happen to get angry, to me, on that level, it's understandable. And at that point, and it's what I'm going to start working on myself, you should probably stop and say a prayer. Like at that point, when you start feeling the sadness or the rage, when you start feeling the sadness or the hopelessness or the rage, if those voices are speaking into your head, the smartest thing you can do is pause right there. Maybe you don't get on your knees, but hell, if you're not too ashamed to, get on your knees and pray. Pray to the Lord in heaven. Ask for his help. Ask for his, I don't know if intercession is the right word, but ask for the Lord's help on your behalf. That's what I should do. That's what I need to do. It's not what I've been doing. In general, like when I deal with this stuff, I tend to deal with it by drinking beer and smoke and vaping weed. And you know, listen, I'm not going to stop drinking beer or vaping weed anytime soon. You know, I won't make a promise like that I can't keep. But what I need to do, and I've come to realize this, is sort of just step back. And when I hear those voices, ask for basically the Lord's help. If you knew me, especially if you knew me before 2012, you'd realize how difficult it is for me to say these words, because I have been most of my life a kind of prideful person. I believe that I would make it on my own, come hell or high water. If I crash and burn, I'll get up again, but it'll be my own energy, my own gas. You know, I'll do it my way. And listen, there's nothing wrong with that kind of perspective on a certain level. We should all be independent. We should all try to solve problems on our own. But there is a kind of sickness of pride if you're not willing to ask for any help at all. I was at a point almost a year ago where I just wasn't willing to ask for any help at all. I was more or less convinced I'd isolated every member of my family. I'm not sure that's... I think I have isolated a lot of my family. It's not all my fault, but I do think that that's happened. But it was one of those really dark, hopeless places. And the demon, and I don't know his name, it might not even be one, you never can tell, but the demon whispered in my ear, you know, Dan, you can just walk down that street. In their closet, there's an outdoor extension cord, 20 feet long, heavy duty. You take that, some of the Gorilla tape in the closet, you walk down the street to that bridge, and I won't say where, because frankly, it's a very dark, depressing place. And this is Seattle. So Seattle in the wintertime, if you can imagine a bridge in Seattle in the wintertime that has a right to be called dark and depressing, despite the fact that Seattle itself is just dark and depressing in the wintertime, that's the bridge. And just hang yourself. Hang yourself off the bridge, Dan. Go down to the bridge and hang yourself. Do it at 2 a.m. Do it early in the morning. Do it so that when people wake up, they can see. And these same voices, these same demons have been talking to me lately, basically telling me the same thing. I'm a loser. I'm a scumbag. I'm a failure. I let everyone down. I'm financially broke, which really doesn't bother me a whole lot, but, you know, I don't have the resources to get by. And the voice in my head says, Dan, if all of that is true, if you really are just this shitty person who's almost 50 years old, what do you think is going to happen in the next 20 or 30 years? You think you're going to somehow get to redo things? You think you get a do-over? No. Best case scenario, these are the days of your life on the other side of the curve, and everything gets worse. Everything falls apart. Your body will fall apart. Your mind will fall apart. Every day from now on, you will be less of the person you were before. That's what the voices say. And so are these voices demons? I don't know. I've come to the realization that they might very well be. I know that demons gain strength from our weakness. And as being a human being, and, you know, being a human being, it's all I got to say. I am, if anything, as a human, a huge bag, a giant drawer, a cargo container of weakness. Humans have lots of weakness. We do. We don't like to admit it because, again, the secular worldview is about this kind of individual empowerment, you know, me against the world, except, of course, when I join some group. It is a set of contradictions, but there is this secular mentality that says, don't look towards the shadows, look towards the biology, go see a doctor, take a pill. So yeah, I do have this demon, these demons, whatever, singular or plural, that haunt me in the night. They haunt me in the wilderness. And I say wilderness because I mean that, obviously, metaphorically. I'm not actually in the woods. But in terms of my life, I do feel most of these days like I'm in the wilderness. And every day, I keep trying to find a way out. And listen, part of the process of finding a way out was like 2014, thinking that, well, I'll just go back to Indianapolis. You know, I'll find the homeland of my soul. It was a phrase I used to someone. I'll find the homeland of my soul by going back to Indianapolis. Well, guess what? That didn't work for all sorts of reasons. And then in 2017, I ran into somebody that I thought agreed with me philosophically. And on a certain level, we probably did, but it was a bad combination. I don't hold any deep grudges against this particular person, but I will tell you that, like going to Indianapolis from Seattle, it too was a kind of mistake. It was a false landing. You know, it was a mirage. It was not going to work, and it shouldn't have worked. And I, you know, live and learn, right? And as a side note, I got to tell you, the worst way to get to know people is social media. I say this a lot. I'll keep saying it. If you use social media, fine. If you use Facebook and Twitter, fine. But if you're going to use that as a primary means of finding people, getting to know people, that is a terrible fucking idea. So yeah, I feel like I'm in the wilderness, and I feel like there's more than a few demons wanting me to renounce God, to basically renounce myself, to act out. Probably the most miserable thing I could do would be to hurt, you know, to kill myself. Other than hurting someone else, to kill myself, that would be pretty fucking miserable. A lot of people would be sad if I did that. I know this. I know that it would be the worst example. It's not like I've been a very good example to my nieces and nephews, but I would be the shittiest example possible if I simply gave up. But I'm not going to lie to you. On nights like this, Christmas Eve 2018, those voices in my head, the voices that say you're just a loser, you should go kill yourself, those voices are convincing. They are rhetorically powerful. I am, in many ways, at my weakest moments, an open vessel to those voices. The voices that tell me this. The voices that say, get a plan together, go down to the, I don't know, the overpass, and just jump onto I-5. which sounds like I'm just driving in my car, but I think you know what I mean. Full disclosure, I say this because people overreact and they don't want to listen these days. I don't want to hurt myself or anyone else. I definitely don't want to hurt anyone else. I don't want to hurt myself. I have a lot of anger and a lot of hopelessness and all of that sort of, you know, all of that mixed together is not a great combination. But I'm not, you know, a danger to myself or others. So this is me talking about something, not talking about doing it. But the subject is demons. And so, yeah, I have a demon. And that demon, at moments like this in my life, will speak constantly to me. It will describe all of the items in my apartment. It will tell me all the ways I can kill myself. You know, you can take the box cutter. You could take the knife. You can grab that Cat 5 cable. Sure, it's not that strong, but you can reinforce it. You can tie it around the edge or the fence line or the fence or the whatever you want to call it. You can tie it to the edge of that bridge, not the bridge, but the overpass. And you can just put the other end around your neck and jump off. I ask that you have the courage to listen, whoever you are, because if you do this, and if you believe what I believe, you're going to go to hell. You rightfully should go to hell because you're taking the greatest gift that God gives us, and that is the gift of existence, the gift of life, and you're just treating it like it's nothing. And why? Because you're in some pain. And actually, when you think about this, it kind of explains the way that God behaves in the Old Testament, but specifically in those first five books, you know, mainly the books that describe the time of the Israelites in the wilderness. The Israelites periodically throughout those first few books, you know, are kind of up in arms, like, why are we here? How did we end up here? The same people that were happy to be saved by the Lord, happy to be saved by Moses, periodically saying, come on, this is terrible. You know, we have to eat crickets. What the hell? There's something in the Bible about how it's okay to eat crickets. That's how hard it is. And so can't you just take me back to Egypt? Can't you just take me back to Pharaoh? And yeah, there's actually a part of those first five books, and I think it might be in Deuteronomy, but I could be wrong, where essentially, and one of them is Dathan, but essentially Dathan, a few others, a couple families, because of their lack of faith, Moses, you know, asked the Lord to open up the earth and the earth swallowed them up, you know? And a lot of this seems really, really violent and angry and vengeful if you don't see it for the full picture. These are people that were living as slaves in Egypt, and they were liberated from that slavery. And they came to realize that when you're no longer a slave, you're kind of responsible for your whole life. That includes finding food and water and shelter. And so, yeah, suicide is wrong for the same reason that these Israelites, these Jews griping, the Hebrews griping about the difficulties of being in the wilderness. You know something? That is the nature of freedom. That's the nature of free will. If you're going to be in this world and you're going to have free will, exercise free will, choices have consequences. And we all have a level of responsibility, even if we don't want to see it. But the demons will tell you, listen, those crickets, man, when you were working for the Pharaoh, you didn't have to eat crickets. When you were working for the Pharaoh, you weren't cold every night. Now, sure, the demons lie. But as I've said before, lies are often filled with lots of truths. Just because something is a lie doesn't mean it's 100% false. The structure is false. But great lies, powerful lies, like the lies that the devil tells, are always filled with chunks of truth. Always. You know, invariably. And sometimes the lies are so sophisticated that they might be 80 or 90% true. But it's that other 5 or 10 or 20% that is your undoing. that is your downfall if you believe the lie. I think there's some truth to the following statement. I have failed to be the man that I have wanted to be in my life, nor do I fully understand the man I should be. That's a true statement. I have failed people I care about in recent years, not deliberately, not out of vengeance or spite, but kind of out of the madness of existence. That is also true. I think I'm a decent and generous person. That is also true. I am not a perfect person, but when I have had the resources, I've tried to help people. Not perfectly, not systematically, not in any sophisticated, complex way, but more of just generally trying to be there for people. And in the last few years, I guess I've needed help myself, which kind of brings us back to the issue of pride. But yeah, I don't think, when I look at this rationally, I don't think I'm a terrible person. I think I'm a human being. I'm far less than perfect. None of us is God. And yes, all of that means I'm a sinner and I have to ask for forgiveness every day. But being a sinner doesn't mean I'm garbage. Just because you sin or make mistakes, just because you might find yourself in a situation economically, which is terrible, doesn't mean you're garbage. If you're homeless, if you're poor, if for whatever reason you've dropped off the radar of contemporary modernity and find yourself wondering, how are you going to sleep tonight? How are you going to find water or food? That doesn't make you garbage. That just means you're struggling. And I guess I would say that there's no guarantee with anything. But one of the actions we can all take when we're struggling that doesn't really cost us anything is to close our hands and maybe close our eyes and cast our gaze into infinity and ask the Lord for help. It's a hard thing to do. It's potentially harder than asking people for help. You know, I think the Lord speaks to us in ways that are kind of indirect, but it's not like I get a conversation from this. All of this is based on faith. So yeah, when the demons come, and the demons do often show up, and when they show up in the dark of the night, and when they're telling you things like, you're ugly, you're stupid, you're fat, you're worthless, you're old, if the demons tell you things like this, it's okay to take an honest approximation of where you're at. Maybe there's a little bit of truth there. Maybe you do need to go for a few more walks. Maybe you are drinking a little too much. Maybe there are a few things that you do need to improve, but that doesn't mean the demon's right. That just means the demon is a good liar. And so in the process of dealing with demons, it's a multi-step process, but there's at least one step that will help, and that is to pray. Pray in faith, pray in honesty. The Lord knows if your heart is true. The Lord knows everything about you. Everything about me, everything about the world. So the first step is to pray. The second step is to remember that every lie a demon tells, every lie, frankly, that anyone tells, including Satan, does contain usually some truth. Otherwise, the lie just wouldn't really work. And even sometimes the truth is just low self-esteem. Like, I know this is hard to believe. People don't want to believe it. But there are people in this world who seemingly have it all. They are beautiful, they are rich. From a superficial perspective, if I showed you a picture of the person, you'd say, wow, I wish I were that person, right? They have money, they have health, they have beauty, they have intelligence. They have it all. But what if I told you that even those people have demons, and even those people have weakness? And as often as not, they have really low self-esteem. So essentially, if a demon comes calling the night and says, you know, listen, you've wasted your life, no one's going to love you, you're living in your fancy house, but you're disconnected from everyone, your kids hate you. When that demon comes in the night, it's always going to use a little bit of truth to get under your skin. So the other piece of advice, other than praying and asking for the Lord to help, is to, and this is going to sound a bit crazy, but instead of just hearing the demon, listen to the words, because this is how you defeat this kind of crap. Find the words that you think might be true. disregard the ones that are obviously false. And if some of them seem true, ask for God's wisdom, meditate on this, ask yourself if you need to make a change. I don't think demons are here to help us. Demons are not angels. Demons are not our friends. But demons, like humans, are not perfect. In fact, if you've read C.S. Lewis, if you've read the Screwtape Letters, you know that the main demon worker guy loses his human control, his human target, because of subtle things, little things, you know, mistakes that will definitely be punished and mocked in hell, you know. But the demon failed because, again, demons are not perfect. Humans are not perfect. The only thing perfect in the universe is God. So yeah, I'm not saying this is the best advice, but it's a kind of a two-step process. Step one is pray, and step two is meditate on the stupid shit the demon's saying. Because listen, as stupid as the demon might be, and the demon might be incredibly stupid, in order for the demon to succeed, the demon has to say a few things that would actually resonate. So think about those things. But then ask yourself, and really ask yourself, what would the Lord in heaven want you to do? Okay? If you happen to have a weakness, would the Lord in heaven want you to just go off and die someplace, or to just be honest about your weakness? If you happen to have some anger in your heart, some hatred, man, do I have a lot of rage. Meditate on that rage. Ask yourself, where is that coming from? What is that? What's it about? And so eventually, with God's grace and help, you can make it through this. You can actually get over these demons. These demons disappear like a vapor. They're gone forever. Because every time you unmask the demon, the demon's power is lost. If you have really low self-esteem and you figure out a way through that, the demon's power is lost. If you have addiction issues, if you are doing things that are hurtful to others, and you work on that, and you deal with that, and you overcome it, the demon's power is lost. It will be gone. It will look for someone else to target. That's my general feeling on demons. Do I think that every once in a while they show up in some gross, scary way, like with some type of CGI special effects visage? Yeah, sure. Maybe every once in a while the demons go Hollywood. But like I said, I think the demons, like the devil, who is their boss, I think the demons basically, you know, like I said, they're not perfect, but they're way more subtle than that. Most of them, probably all of them, for most of the work they do, is a whisper in the ear. A whisper in the head. So on this Christmas Eve, 2018, I'm going to ask of myself and ask of you, whoever you are, that instead of listening to the darkness, and definitely instead of believing the darkness, ask for Lord's wisdom, pray, and then meditate upon that stuff the demon says. Because what you'll find, probably, is one or two things the demon said has a little bit of truth to it, and most of it is just bullshit. So yeah, Merry Christmas, part 3.